Hey, it's Kiefer once again backstage at Bonnaroo and joined by a name we were just talking here that we think everybody knows, Weird Al Yankovic. Thank you so much for coming by.
My pleasure. Thanks, Kiefer.
You've got another book out, and we're going to talk about that in just a little bit. But I want to start at the very beginning. What was it about the accordion? Were you pushed towards the accordion, or did you see the accordion say, I have to play that?
I can't imagine I was begging my parents for accordion lessons. I don't think that happened. I think they probably made that life-altering decision for me, just because I think they wanted me to be a chick magnet in high school. Because, you know, when you play the accordion, you're a one-man band, you're the life of every party. Who wouldn't want to date the accordion player?
There are certain touch tones, and I think that it probably transcends generations or age groups, where you mention something like Mad Magazine, Monty Python, National Lampoon, the Comedy Hour, and the magazine, and another name is Dr. Demento. Tell me about discovering Dr. Demento as a fan and how he helped you get a start.
Well, a friend of mine in, I don't know if it was middle school or high school, but I was maybe 12, 13 years old, and my friend told me, there's this guy on KMET Los Angeles Sunday night, Dr. Demento, 4 hours of just crazy music, weird songs, novelty stuff. Check it out. And I listened to it and I was like, wow, this guy is inside my head. I found my people. That's where I first heard Spike Jones and Tom Lehrer, Stan Freberg, Alan Sherman, you know, Zappa, Shel Silverstein. I mean, all these wonderful people. And completely warped my brain and influenced me. And that's why I started writing those songs.
When it comes to a parody, do you think about which comes first? Do you think about spoofing something culturally or spoofing the song? What determines the direction that you go?
It goes both ways. You know, traditionally I've done more where I just take a popular song and kind of tweak it a little bit and go a different direction with it. But I have done a lot of songs where I will pick a song that's maybe not the most current song, but pair it with a cultural phenomenon, a current hit movie or something else that's rocking the zeitgeist. So it works both ways.
The one song that you always ask permission, and you don't necessarily have to get permission to do a parody, is that right?
That's correct. It's considered fair use, but it's also a gray area, so I like to make sure that everybody is okay with it.
One song that you really wanted to work with and you just didn't get the permission?
Well, there's been a few that slipped between the cracks. I think the most recent version of that would be You're Pitiful, which was my James Blunt parody of You're Beautiful. And James Blunt was okay with it initially. And his record label, I found out after I recorded it, was not so much okay with it. And it became a matter of like my record label deciding they didn't want to go to war with Atlantic Records, which was James's record label. And I just don't like drama. So I said, you know what? We're not going to put it on the album. But somehow it slipped out onto the internet and people can download it for free, apparently, from what I hear.
Folks may not know this, but you are a New York Times bestselling author.
That's true.
When I Grow Up was the first book. You have written a follow-up, a sequel, would that be correct?
Yes, and we're talking children's picture books. So, you know, it's like an 800-word book with pictures. So all of my writer friends are very envious. Like, I've been working my whole life to be a New York Times bestseller, and you write 800 words. That's not fair.
For those who may not have read it, what is the theme? What is the idea behind both books?
Both books feature a third grader named Billy, who's a very energetic, imaginative kid. In fact, his imagination gets him to trouble in the second book because his new teacher, Mr. Booth, is a very strict, rule-following, by-the-rules kind of guy, and he doesn't appreciate nonsense, and he doesn't like tall tales, and he's not a big fan of imaginative kids. So they have a little bit of a conflict that gets resolved by the end of the book, and mostly it's a celebration of imagination.
The difference between writing a song, parody or otherwise, and writing a book, or is there similarities?
There's a lot that kind of crosses over. I mean, my picture books, I write in verse. So in a sense, it's like writing a very long narrative song. I just don't have to write the music for it. So it's something that's in my wheelhouse, and I feel like, I've had a lot of practice. I think I'm pretty good at it by now.
One of the themes going on at Bonnaroo this year, we're talking album art, but since you have a book out and we've got it in front of us, tell us a little bit about the album cover. Did you... Who illustrated it?
The book is illustrated by Wes Hargis, who's a very talented illustrator from Arizona. In fact, he illustrated my first book when I grew up as well. And the cover is Billy. He's standing on ostensibly the teacher's desk. There's books and an apple. And he's standing on a mountain of snow in hiking boots. And he's got his backpack on. I told my editor, you know, whenever I see a mountain of something that looks like snow on a desk, I think of Scarface. So this might not be the best thing for a children's book. But there's nobody's going to think that. Nobody's going to think that. So anyway. All
right. But it kind of matches the personality of Billy, though.
He's very hopped up.
Yes. We're also asking people to pick out their favorite Beatles album based on the cover art. But first, the Beatles, what did they mean to you?
Beatles are my favorite band, my favorite boy band for sure. I mean, they're a big influence on me. I got to work with Paul McCartney, and definitely a high point of my life. I mean, Paul McCartney recognized me at a party in 1984, and that was the most starstruck I've ever been in my life. I was just trying to weasel my way up to him and say, "Hi, Mr. McCartney, I'm a big fan of." "Oh, it's Weird Al." He turned to Linda, "Look, honey, it's Weird Al." So that was a huge deal for me, obviously, and I still haven't gotten over that.
What would you work on together?
Paul was nice enough to do a cameo in a short 3D film that I did called Al's Brain in 3D, which we did as an attraction for the Orange County Fair a couple of years ago. And we're hoping that it'll tour science fairs and museums and things like that. But it was a Q&A session part of the film, and Paul was nice enough to strum his guitar and ask, "So Al, how does the brain really work?" Which leads into a music video. So I can say, if nothing else in my life, I can say I've directed Paul McCartney.
Were you here last night? Did you get a chance to see him?
I wasn't. You know, I've seen Paul live a few times before, but we just got in this morning, so I missed his set last night.
Beatles album covers based Beatles album covers. What's your favorite?
My all-time favorite Beatles album cover is the Butcher cover, which is hard to come by. But I mean, that was the Beatles at their darkest and their most satirical, and you know, not PC, and you know, they kind of crossed the line, which I like. I like they were pushing some envelopes there. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, at the time, Capitol was like butchering their albums. They were resequencing and putting them out, you know, trying to make more money out of the Beatles, make four albums out of three. And the Beatles didn't appreciate it. So they posed with a bunch of meat and baby dolls. It was sort of very Alice Cooper-ish, actually, at the time. But they did that, and the record label, I don't know how any of those got printed up, but a few did, and the record label said, "No, this isn't going to work."
I think it was Yesterday and Today. And I think that they are worth thousands of dollars if you can get one. I've seen a few of them. Well, great. You did one of the band announcement videos for Bonnaroo, which was hilarious. It was part game show, late night show, telethon. But in your opening monologue, you used the term, let me see if I get this right, metric buttload. How much is that?
Oh, it's quite a bit. I haven't got my slide rule, so I can't give you an exact. It's about the size of this room, I think.
Weird Al, thank you so much for coming by. It's a pleasure to meet you, and thanks for all the laughs for all the years.
Well, thank you.
And check out the book, My New Teacher and Me. And that is it. Backstage at Bonnaroo.